The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Shavua Tov, good morning, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov, Mishe Nichnas Adar, Marbim B'Simcha, they say.
Absolutely, they do.
And it's kind of the signal that Purim's on the way, although this year I think Purim is going to certainly be a different event. I think Purim will always go down as the first kind of super spreader event of this pandemic.
Yeah, we were fortunate in South Africa in that it was almost, we were kind of a week or two later. So Purim, you know, we were already hearing stories. We were already hearing what was happening. People were a little bit cautious, not great, but I don't think it was fully here yet. So we just avoided that. I know in the United States and in Israel, Purim was a huge, huge trigger event.
It was indeed. But a surprise Air Force drill taking place this morning. Just to quickly mention, it's called Vered HaGalil. It's in the north. Sometimes they have these surprise drills, because they have to surprise reserve soldiers to see how quickly they could get to base and to be ready in the event of an emergency. So nothing known about this before, nothing really planned, at least at the grassroots level. People literally told at the last minute, having to jump up to see how effective the Air Force can be. Israel's air superiority, one of the critical beacons, one of the critical pillars of our military superiority in general, and our ability to protect Israel. So an important event that is.
Absolutely. Tell us about the study undertaken in Israel around the Pfizer vaccine. What kind of results are we seeing there?
So this is a very, very surprising, at least for me. I mean, even though I know that this is what the vaccine is all about, but the results of this study have really come through to emphasize and to confirm the positive things that we want to hear about the Pfizer vaccine. This is a study that was undertaken, data collected from 1.2 million Israelis, a study that was undertaken by the Clalit Health Medical Organization in conjunction with colleagues at Harvard University. And the 1.2 million people who were part of the study were split into two groups, 600,000 people who actually received the vaccination and 600,000 people who did not receive the vaccination. We're told that the profiles of the two groups were very, very similar indeed, including people from a slightly younger age group, but also more importantly, perhaps, including people in the over 70s, over 60s at least. 170,000 of each group were apparently 60-year-old plus. And the results of this survey, the research that was done, shows that there is a very, very high efficacy of the vaccine amongst those people who took it, that there was a 94% fall in symptomatic infections amongst those who were vaccinated, and a 92% fall in the rate of those who were seriously ill amongst those who were vaccinated and who had waited that 7-day period following the end of, following the second vaccination. So this really is bearing out Israel's desire, willingness to be first to jump into this pool and to really vaccinate everybody across the board without any hesitation. Just as well, because I think that at the time that the vaccinations were required and that we decided, that our government decided on our behalf to enter into this vaccination program, and the results had been proven in certain clinical trials, but I think that those clinical trials, even though they were certainly acceptable to the various organizations, regulatory bodies that approve such vaccinations, you know, the clinical trials were clearly okay for them. But it seemed as if though the clinical trials were quite abbreviated, were shorter than usual, and perhaps even rushed through the system, giving rise to a lot of people being a little skeptical about the truth of what really is in this vaccination. So this trial, I think, is very, very important, very, very broad spread, with more than a million people participating, and with a very honorable institution such as Harvard being part of it. So I think that this really bears out Israel's desire to go ahead and vaccinate as many people as possible. And we hope that this will finally be seen in our society, because as things stand at the moment, even though the number of virus infections of people who are newly diagnosed, those numbers have decreased somewhat over the end of last week and into this week, we're still not really seeing yet the full broad effect of the vaccination program. And maybe it's too early. Maybe we need to give it a month or two, and hopefully then we'll begin to feel a little bit more as things open up a little bit more and the numbers hopefully at that stage don't suddenly start to skyrocket. But in the meantime, schools are reopening, different levels of schooling in different towns and cities depending on the traffic light status of each neighborhood of each town and city. In Haifa, for example, it seems as if though all schools and kindergartens will return today. In Jerusalem, they announced that certain neighborhoods will have grades 1 to 4 returning tomorrow. And some companies are now getting mobile units to come to their company office, to their workplace, and vaccinate employees at the place of work. A company such as SodaStream, for example, has asked for Magenta Vida Dom to send a mobile unit to vaccinate employees. And for SodaStream, that's considered to be significant because a lot of the employees of SodaStream are Bedouins and Arabs, and those are people who generally have not had high rates of vaccination. So by companies like that inviting the authorities to come to the place of work and vaccinate people, hopefully that will also increase the rate of vaccination and help to proliferate the results of the study that we've seen with the in conjunction with Harvard University.
Absolutely incredible. And I tweeted this morning, I see that even Rwanda started vaccinating their frontline workers. South Africa yet to give one vaccine. The UAE's first ambassador to Israel has been appointed. Where will he actually have his embassy in Israel?
So, you know, obviously the whole issue of the location of the embassies in Israel has been a long time controversial issue. And we know that during the Trump administration, the U.S. decided to move their embassy to Jerusalem, a controversial decision in the eyes of some members of the international community in Israel, very much welcome. In the case of the United Arab Emirates, it has been decided that the embassy will be in Tel Aviv. And I don't think that anybody is really batting an eyelid or having any complaint about this decision. We Israelis understand the sensitivity of this issue, particularly within the Arab world. And the first ambassador to Israel, Mohammed Mahmoud Al-Kadja, has been officially appointed. They said that he's been sworn in within the Arab Emirates, which doesn't sound right to me because I think that the swearing-in process usually takes place in the hosting country by the president of the hosting country. So I'm not aware of the fact that he's actually arrived in Israel yet to be sworn in by President Ruvi Rivlin, but I guess that will be on the cards in due course. But the normalization of relations is moving ahead at quite a pace. We've seen how things have just developed over a very, very short period of time. The first job that the ambassador will have is to deal with this big issue of hundreds of Israelis who are still stuck in the Arab Emirates, unable to get home due to the fact that we've had the lockdown and the airport has been closed. There have been some emergency repatriation flights that were put on, but we understand that so many people have been left behind, unable to gain seats on those flights to come home. So I'm guessing that the ambassador will have that as one of the first issues to deal with. But of course, not only that, there are a lot of other positive things that hopefully the ambassador will become involved in. It's been noted that the United Arab Emirates has had this massive success in sending a space vehicle, which is currently entering the orbit around Mars, entered the orbit around Mars last week. It's only one of five agencies in the world that have actually been able to reach Mars and to go into orbit around Mars. And so I know that Israeli space exploration enthusiasts and companies will be very, very eager to cooperate with the know-how and the ability that the United Arab Emirates has demonstrated by getting that space vehicle into Mars's orbit. Mm. Israel's own Bereshit moon project, which unfortunately failed the last time there was an attempted landing on the moon, is back on track again, the second mission. And apparently within the next 3 years, we're hoping to see an Israeli space vehicle landing successfully this time on the moon. So I'm guessing that there will be some cooperation between the two nations on that front as well.
Absolutely incredible to think that this is a reality is really so absolutely awesome. Finally, the U.S. administration has threatened to withdraw landing rights in the U.S. for LL planes. What on earth is going on?
Well, this is really just a little spat that's going on with regard to the repatriation flights. The many Israelis who are trying to get home, as I mentioned before, not only from the Arab Emirates, but indeed from the United States and from European destinations as well. And the Civil Aviation Authority decided to put on emergency flights and actually published some sort of a tender for airlines to bid in order to allow them to carry out these repatriation flights. But it seems as if though the Civil Aviation Authority only allowed Israeli airlines to bid, and that U.S.-based airlines such as Delta and United were actually excluded from the bidding process and as such do not have the right to carry any passengers on these repatriation flights. Now, we know that airlines are fighting for every last piece of business that they can possibly put their hands on. Under the circumstances, they want to keep their planes in the air as much as they can, and that's been a very, very difficult and challenging job to carry out under the current circumstances. So obviously Delta and United have been very sensitive to the fact that the Civil Aviation Authority in Israel has not allowed them to participate in this tender, and as a result of which they've got the support of the Biden administration, who's threatened to actually withdraw landing rights to LL planes if Israel doesn't flatten the competition and allow U.S. airlines to compete in order to carry out those repatriation flights as well. It's an interesting thing, but also kind of ties in a little bit, I'm guessing, to the current rumor mill that seems to be circulating about why President Biden has yet to contact Prime Minister Netanyahu, even though he's been in office now already for some weeks. Generally speaking, in the past, historically, we've seen the new U.S. president call the Israeli prime minister within a very, very short time of taking office. In the case of Joe Biden, that has not happened. And there's a lot of speculation as to whether this is a snub on the part of the U.S. administration against Prime Minister Netanyahu personally, against Israel in general. I think that President Biden has probably got some quite smart advisors around him who have told him that any phone call that he makes to Prime Minister Netanyahu becomes part of the election process, that it will undoubtedly be used by the Prime Minister in order to generate some support. The election now just over 30 days away, so very, very close until we go into our election process. And I'm suspecting that President Biden doesn't want to be dragged into Israel's election. So he's being advised not to call Prime Minister Netanyahu, at least until after the election. I suppose the logical thing would be for him to carry out a call to whoever wins the election and congratulate them on winning the election, and then make the contact between Israel and the new U.S. administration. That's my speculation. But obviously, this particular issue has used up a lot of newspaper columns. People speculating as to why the call has not come through yet from the presidential, from the Oval Office of the new president.
So I was thinking maybe on Valentine's Day it would happen, but it didn't, eh?
Well, even Valentine's Day, I think, unfortunately, this year is part of the election process and hardly really felt in Israel, to be honest. I mean, I know that in recent years, Valentine's Day has become more of a thing. But I think we're still very much intent on celebrating Tu B'Av rather than Valentine's Day.
Absolutely. It's just about to go 8 o'clock, Anthony Reich. Thank you, as always. We'll, of course, chat to you tomorrow morning, same place. It is the same time.
Chai FM, your station of choice since 2008.